I hope that you've had a good lunch. And that your lunch hasn't made you too sleepy. My glasses are fogging up again, so goodbye, sharp clarity, and welcome to Monet-like Impressionist. For this afternoon part of our day-long retreat, now, thank you. We're going to be looking direct now into the main theme or the main topic for our retreat today. Is everyone able to hear? All right? Yes? Oh, good. Little bit up, more up. And there are also two seats in the front here. One there and one here that are available for anyone who would like to sit closer. And I will promise not to bite. Hopefully there will be lots of metta, loving kindness and compassion energy from this area here. So, how many of you are long-time practitioners? I heard from Lulu from Brisbane Heart Insight Meditation that there are those who have been like studying and practicing for years and years. What does long time? I kind of let you self-define what long time means, no? How about more than 6 months? Oh, more than 10 years. Oh, more than 40 years. Oh, excellent, Sad. That's wonderful. So I'm so glad to be in such distinguished company. So, have you ever in Buddhism heard of the asavas or ashravas? Hands? Quite a few. How about the kilesas? Or like when I went to India, then I had learned about the kilesas before, and then I heard people talking about clash all the time. I mean, clash because of this, clash because of that. And it sounded like using the English word clash, would mean like coming into conflict or like the clash of cymbals together, ching, and you know, making a big noise, that kind of thing. And then I found out that this was just an Indian pronunciation of kilesas, clash, klesh, klesh is the kilesas. And it was being used so similarly to the English word clash that I actually thought that's what it was. We normally translate these as the defilements, sometimes as hindrances, sometimes as afflictions. I personally like afflictions myself. I feel like it's quite an apt translation for the kilesas. And then there's a way in Buddhism where you can even combine the kilesas and the asavas together, and then you get kilesavas. So kilesas and asavas together. What is it? Like defilements and hindrances and obstructions and obstacles and all kinds of suffering, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. We can get all of that, yes? In these wonderful words that we can even chant so beautifully together, like dukkha domanasa payasapi, upayasapi dukkha, apiyehi sampayogo dukkho, piyehi vipayogo dukkho. Lots and lots and lots of kinds of dukkha, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. So for the asavas, I'd like to take a closer look now. Asavas, here we are in Bodhichan Monastery, and we can see lots of beautiful Chinese characters around us when we look in the different directions. And the ancient translators chose to translate the asavas via the meaning that we find also in ancient medical texts for the asavas. So it can be said like an inflow or outflow, influx or outflux. So when we look at the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, like for the eyes, we're taking in sights. We're also looking back out, the inflow and outflow for the ears, taking in sounds. Well, the sounds come out of our mouth. It's not exact parallel in this regard. For our mouth, also taking in, putting out. Our bodies also, touch, feelings are coming in, and then also, you know, touch and feelings go out. So for all of our sense bases, and according to the texts, including the mind base, then there's the inflow and there's the outflow. So even like our skin is a semi-permeable membrane, right? Although legally it looks like it's a very hard line somehow, defining the difference between self and other. In actuality, it's a semi-permeable membrane, so it's taking in. We can absorb things through the skin, and also stuff is coming out, as you know. Sweat is coming out, and oil is coming out, and other things. In the medical context, where this gets really interesting is if on your skin you get a cut. If you get a cut, then the skin is open in that place, and the danger is that things can come in and then cause infection and illness, even to the extent of it being deadly, right? And then also, there's the stuff that comes out, there's the oozing of the pus or of the infection or whatever it may be, and that stuff is also called the asavas. So with regards to the body, another use is like the stuff that comes out of our nose and the stuff that comes out of our eyes and even out of our ears and out of our mouths and out of our skin and all of these things. So in very ordinary terminology, when that stuff gets on our handkerchief or when that stuff gets in a tissue or when that stuff gets in our clothes, then we'd say it's been dirtied, it's been soiled. And this is where then we get the terminology like defilements is like a very high class way of saying that kind of thing, right? So when there is such an opening, when there is such a wound, and when there is an infection, then there's a kind of, you know, there's some sickness, and there's also danger there in terms of that, like getting in too much in a way that's going to be really harmful to us or even could be deadly. And also a way of the things coming out when there's sickness in the body, if there's an open cut or wound or sore that can then potentially make someone else ill. So this is the old medical context. When we look at the mental context or the heart context, then we see, this time I won't ask you to all necessarily put up your hands, but I'll just gamble that probably everyone would. How many of us have ever seen something that upset us? You don't have to put up your hands. I know if you have the chance, you can put up both your hands and both your legs. And it's like how many fingers for how many times. Yes, you can add your toes. And all of our fingers and all of our toes will be up like this. Probably for most of us, maybe there's somebody in the room who is... Let's see, I don't know. Do we dare ask, is there anyone who has never seen anything upsetting? Is there anyone who has never heard anything upsetting? Anyone who has never felt anything upsetting? So I don't know if this is just you're taking the privacy option here, but I think this would be completely normal and also really good to recognize in terms of compassion for our humanity and for our common situation. So I did ask about seeing, and I asked about hearing, and I asked about feeling. And we know for ourselves also that there are really the internal and the external bases for these things. So we can see something that looks like we're seeing it and it's coming in from outside and then it's got into our mind and got into our heart. But then there's also having our eyes closed and we see something internally, some memory, some imagination, or some something like that is there, and just that itself, just internally, even if it's not a memory, even if it's just something we're imagining, then is upsetting. So there's the internal and the external base. So when we look at the mind base also in relationship to, I'm talking about seeing again, and even like internal eye consciousness. Yeah, so we can see that there's the way that the things can come in from outside, but even somehow from inside with regards to our different faculties of mind, we can still perceive in this kind of way. So here now, looking at these things. Yes, now everyone was looking so comfortable when they came back from lunch, and now I'm talking about these things and everyone remembering, right? Here we are remembering these things. And how does it feel in the body? Can you tell with your mindfulness of the body? Are you aware of? I can see all of you now, and so I can see the way the body is being held for most everyone is different. The elbows, the back, the jaws, the light in the eyes and the quality of the light in the eyes, different. Even where the teeth are showing, something different. We can see, yes, human beings can look a little bit like tigers, can't they? Human beings can look a little bit like wolves. This kind of thing. We can, yeah? Certainly. And so we're talking about things that are like sources of stress, tension. Again, I was joking about sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. In Pali, soka parideva dukkha domana supayasapi dukkha. Again, it's like many different kinds of suffering. So during this time now, with regards to the asavas, looking at them as something that can come in, also something that can go out, like a wound where there's an opening, also something that can be healed, where there had been the danger, and when that's healed, the danger is there no more, because the body, if we're talking about just the body, like the body has its own natural system, even without closing it off, not sealing it up, it continues to be a semi-permeable. The skin continues to be a semi-permeable membrane. We're talking about working with our minds and our hearts now with regards to these four boundless radiant qualities that we were studying in the sutta this morning. Yes? So, with apologies for all those who are feeling stress and tension or pain or grief with regards to something that has been remembered from the eyes, through the eyes, or through the ears, or felt. And just having mentioned it briefly, then that's come up. And then there's the feeling of that, feeling of it in the body, what it feels like in the body, or at the level of just feelings themselves, if we say, is that a pleasant feeling, or is it an unpleasant feeling, or a neutral feeling, maybe unpleasant feeling, just to recognize this is unpleasant. And then with regards to the mind and the heart, and understanding it was just a thought. There were just some words, and then just a thought, and just a memory in a flash. And then, as we were talking about earlier, that has its effect, its ripple effect, the cascades in the body and feelings and mind in a fraction of a second, or even just in 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. How quickly these things come up. So this morning we were in the fours, the Sangiti Sutta, and we talked about the four boundless qualities. I'm going to raise four on one side, and then, with the miracle of modern technology, I'm also going to raise four on the other side. Yeah? So the four this morning that we were talking about were what? Metta, loving-kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, gladness. We recited, I was saying, appreciative joy, appreciative joy, and then upeka, equanimity is how it's translated. I was avoiding that translation earlier on, and we'll see why later. It's not a bad translation, it's just I like to get into a little bit more, kind of not so superficial, but more depth of meaning with it, and I think sometimes it's misunderstood. So we have these on our one hand, on the one side, and now we're going over to the other side. We're going to talk about then our experience. This is something, now I've read the early Buddhist texts a lot. Even took 3 years to like just be reciting them 8 hours a day, every single day through the entire Sutta Pitaka and all of that, yeah. So there's some level of familiarity with them there. And then also working with these things in practice over a number of years, over and over and over again. As I mentioned earlier, I was born and raised in the United States, at least up to a teenager. When I went off to Europe and then Asia. And so, you know, sometimes even the English of some things in past seemed foreign to me. I had to get over a hurdle in terms of, like, what does that word that's translated here, what does that actually mean? What does it mean to me? What is it in the practice? And then sometimes in practice, then there are other words that have come up for things, or I can analyze my own experience, and it may be like just like the sutta, or sometimes in our ordinary contemporary Western way of looking at things, the other words can come up, similar to the sutta, in line with what it says in the suttas, following the same basic pattern, but framing it the way that we humans in the West do now. I found this very useful for myself, and sometimes useful for others also in terms of accessibility. Here comes the four. Okay, first, seeing. For seeing here, we mean our view. Our view doesn't only actually mean our eyes. It also means like how we're seeing. Also it means how we're hearing. Also it means how we're receiving the things through any of our sense. Well, no, let me go back. It's before receiving. It's just how, like when we see something. Same as that, but for all the sense bases. Does it make sense? I jumped ahead. Number two is the receiving, the taking in. So if it's sight, how I'm receiving what I've seen. And the how is a very deliberate, intentional word here. How I'm receiving what I'm hearing. The focus is on the receiving process, touch, how I'm receiving that touch, also including smell, taste. So, number one, seeing, the view. Number two, the receiving. That's the taking in, taking it in. Number three, what comes after receiving in this process? In ordinary Western terms, we'd say the holding. How am I holding? How am I holding something? Can be what I've seen, heard, smelt, tasted, touched, thought, even imagined, remembered. Can be. So, seeing, receiving, holding, these three. So, in terms of the influx part for the asavas, the influx part, the seeing and the receiving come within the influx part. The holding we experience as being something inside ourselves, internal. This is the third. And then for the outflux part, there is the responding. I could say the reacting. Often it's the reacting. The reacting. Say, I'd like to say responding. Why I want to choose responding is to bring in the element of consciousness, awareness, and intentionality to the process. I would love to have a different word for seeing that implied such in English. That is, to see consciously, intentionally, with awareness, with intentionality. I would love to have such a word choice or alternative for the receiving, the taking in, one that means consciously, with intentionality, with awareness, even with choicefulness. Yeah? And for the holding, is there such a word that implies intentionality? If there is one, please tell me. I'd really love, I'd so appreciate for the outflow part, reacting contemporarily often implies non-intentionality, not conscious, not being choiceful, and responding generally implies there is intentionality, there is consciousness, there is choicefulness. So these are the four. These are the four on this side. Only four. A short list. The seeing. What's next? Receiving. Holding. Responding. So we're going to set down the mic for just a moment. And we're going to think about how to bring these four on either hand together.
Thumbs are just here for balance, okay? We're just going to bring these two groups of four together. Can be without the thumbs. They're just holding the fort together here, okay?
So bringing these two groups of four together. Now, when we've seen something, when we've heard something, for the way that we see it, how does that happen? Different people see things differently. Even all of us now are like in the same room looking, and yet you ask someone to express or explain how they're seeing it, then probably each one of us would speak uniquely to that. If we talk about it afterwards, you know, what did you see, what did you hear there, what did you get from it, what did you receive, then everyone a little bit differently, not just like machines that are all the same, yeah? But what is it that makes for how we're seeing it? Where does that come from? Our eyes are closed, we open our eyes, we see something. Where does that come from? And for the sense of taking in, and then the feelings that are there about it, how does that happen? Is it just automatic? No, my head is shaking. Anyone like to disagree? Is it something that we actually do have possibilities? I was asking for words, for intentionality. Do we have possibilities to bring intentionality to the process of seeing? Intentionality, not only mindfulness. Of course, I mean, bringing mindfulness, that's an intentional act unto itself, isn't it? But thinking about bringing intentionality. How many have seen the Noble Eightfold Path portrayed on a Dhamma wheel with eight spokes? a few. It's often portrayed like that, and others might be like, why do these Buddhists have the wheels around all the time? And sometimes even big ones right at the entrance, and there are ones with 8 spokes, and ones with 12 spokes, and ones with more spokes. What's going on with that? Yeah, one with 8 spokes is very common. At the top of the Noble Eightfold Path portrayed on the wheel, at the very top is the view, the seeing part. It's very important also to recognize that with the Four Noble Truths also, then the fourth noble truth is the path of practice, and then that's defined as the Noble Eightfold Path. So these aren't just meant to be like truths on the wheel set out, but by implication, it's something that can be practiced with. Intentionality can be brought to it, it can be worked with, and if it's worked with well, there's going to be big benefit for us. On the wheel, even, there's the potentiality that working with it well is going to set that wheel, set that Dhamma wheel in motion in our lives and in our practice. So view is there, right at the top, as something that is definitely implied as workable. Not as something that just arises out of karma inexorably, just arises from our conditioning. Now, sometimes people who are like well-educated Buddhists will say, like really fast, when we ask where the view arises, what's causing that view to arise for each of us as it has, and they'll be like, conditioning! Many voices in the room together, conditioning, it's conditioning, it's arising from conditions, conditioning. Each of us has our own unique conditioning. It's the conditioning that's conditioning the view. That's what's making how we're seeing it. And then sometimes those who are so savvy also still, anyway, will feel like a slave to those conditions, chained to those conditions, bound by those conditions, a victim of those conditions, and like, okay, I understand its conditions, but these are the conditions of my life, and they've been like this, and not with a sense that really, like, what we're doing now, what we're experiencing now, what's happening now, these are also conditions. Even changing, sometimes even transformative conditions. If we talk about what we were talking earlier, like having that wheel in our hands like a driver and having our foot on the gas and on the brake and then bringing up the intentionality, like awareness, being awake that we're in the driver's seat. Of course, having got there, that's all from conditions. Having awareness from conditions, we think in Buddhism, fortunate conditions to be a being with awareness like this. And to recognize that we can steer with this wheel, also very fortunate conditions, ones that have enormous power in our lives. So the view and intention are right there at the top, the view and the intention that we're talking about. So here now, we want to bring forth our intention to bear. Has anyone learned for Samma Sankhapo, called right motivation, right intention, what are the main points, main criteria for intention to generate? Also gives a heads up as to what kind of intentions to avoid. What's there? Samma Sankhapo, right intention, right motivation, wise intention. If I asked you to bring up, to generate your wise intention, what would you bring up? What kind of intention? Wholesome, healthy, noble, ennobling, excellent, beautiful, liberating intention. What would you bring up? How would you speak of it?
Oh, harmlessness.
Harmlessness, there's one. Avihimsa Sankhapo. harmlessness, the intention to do no harm, for whatever harm we have been doing, to reduce, to stop, and to do no harm, an intention even on the bright side of benevolence. How about another? There are three main that appear in the text. It's not a very long list, it's quite a short list. Yeah. Non-killing, oh yes, that's good. That comes in under, you know, probably just about all of them. So that's really excellent for harmlessness. So there's one that's called avyapada, avyapada, vayapada. And in fact, in our chant this morning, if I can see it for a moment, in our chant this morning, when we were talking about studying the sutta this morning, without hostility and without ill will, then that word appeared right there. In fact, if we looked at the Pali, then again and again in the last line, then it says, abhya pajena, awarena, abhya pajena. So that a in the front is without. When you turn to the other side, then you see this list of without hostility, without ill will. And this word also appears there in the right motivation, right intention. So, vera, we can say at its root, it's just negativity. It's just like negative. So, avera, without negativity. Here it says without hostility, that's like a little bit more complex, but I'd like to speak about avera is just like without negativity, and it can be without hatred, without hostility, and then avyapajena, avyapada, as we find in right motivation in the Noble Eightfold Path. This one there literally is something that divides the mind. It divides the heart. Baya, there, like we say, bifurcate, to divide. So when this happens, then we see like our sense of self as one thing, and then there's some kind of gap. And then we're looking at the person, we're looking at the condition, we're looking at the situation, even with regards our own bodies and feelings. Even with regards our own minds, when we look at them, there's a sense of divide. In that sense of divide, there's a negativity. There's a negative judgment there, saying, without that, free of that. The mind, the heart is freed of that. So in terms of perspective, in terms of our view, this negativity and then like we're looking or we're hearing or we're feeling something, and then there's that sense of gap, like self and other and againstness that's there. Friction, tension that's there means like closing, eliminating that gap. Without that, we can see how much suffering that tendency causes for us. Yes, with such negativities, how much pain that causes for us. Often we think, if that seems like it's coming from outside, that what we saw, what we heard, we think that other is the problem, that situation is the problem. But here I want to come back to ourselves and recognize in the way that we're seeing, the way that we're receiving, the way that we're holding, the way that we're reacting or responding to the things, the pain and suffering that arises right there in those very dynamics, the very dynamics which are actually within our own domain, within our own sphere of intentionality, within our own choicefulness, within our own workability, in no one else's hands, in fact, but ours, within our own ability in this path of practice. So for these four and these four. Now I'd just like to take a couple of steps in step-by-step work. We brought our hands together before. Now we're going to understand how to apply this, what this means. We imagine seeing something. Something. We bring in the question from the other hand. How can I see this with kindness? Can I see this with kindness? What does it look like if I see it with kindness? What does it feel like if I see it with kindness? If not kindness, compassion. Seeing with compassion. What does this very thing look like if I do see it with compassion? How does it feel if I see with compassion? Going to the third, with appreciation. What does it look like if I see with appreciation? How does it look? Does it change? How does it feel? What does it feel like? With appreciation. Number four, someone said equanimity. I'd like to speak about it a little bit differently in terms of its effective qualities. The ability to be able to hold anything, everything, just as is. The ability to be able to pass through anything at all. Everything, whatever it may be, just as is. That, with that quality of depth and heart, what does it look like? What does it feel like? How does it feel now? We're talking about seeing of something. Likewise for the receiving. Aware of the receiving process. The process of taking in. How we know, how we sense that process of taking something in through our senses, through our sense spaces. Even taking something in from an idea, from a thought, recognizing that's what we're working with now. Even taking something in from a memory. Taking it in. How does it feel? Taking it in with kindness. Bringing kindness to that taking in process. Intentionally bringing kindness, care, loving kindness, compassion, appreciation to the taking in. And to holding, if we have any feelings inside ourselves, old or new, from right now, from this morning, from yesterday, from 10 years ago, from 40 years ago, from 80 years ago. The holding. Even if we find we're holding something inside ourselves, inside our bodies and feelings and minds that we don't even know where it came from. We can't even find what is that associated with. And still, can we bring kindness to it? What does it feel like? What does it look like? That thing that's been held for so long or so short. When bringing loving kindness to it. When bringing compassion, when bringing appreciation, when bringing this heart and mind that can hold absolutely everything, able to pass, able to touch, and able to penetrate into, look into, see into, feel into, pass through absolutely everything. This is the basic paradigm. Using just our minds and hearts, and our mindfulness of the body also, as we feel into it, as we know what it feels like when there's the shift and change, initially subtle, so small, so delicate, happening so quickly sometimes, in a fraction of a second, or just in 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. Even things that have been held for 20, 30, 40 years, just in bringing kindness, compassion, care, appreciation, this kind of heart, 1, 2, 3 seconds, we can see how that holding pattern shifts, evolves, changes. Sometimes we can feel in ourselves even the opening up as if there were a packet of energy that was there, that was just held in that particular pattern, and now, just with this thought, just bringing that kindness and care, it shifts, and that energy then starts to move through the body and becomes bioavailable to our life system again. Sometimes we then feel like we can breathe more deeply. Sometimes we can feel like some place that we didn't realize was stuck in the body is now just like the lights have come on, the door has opened to that place, that area. Different parts that weren't communicating with one another, the channel of communication opens up. We're talking about our natural abilities here. Something that all of us are born with as human beings. But in our lives, from the times that we were children, having this may have been developed or squelched in one way or another. But alive now, in this time, we have the opportunity. We have the chance. None of these things are too late in any part of our life. We can't go back and change what happened in the past, but for how we hold it now, for how we know it now, for how we experience it now, that part is open to us. That part is accessible to us. That part's not a done deal. It's not a story that's already been told. It is the unfolding story, the unfolding experience of our lives. Open, possible to bring in that such a heart of care, intentionality, choicefulness in terms of what qualities we bring to the seeing, to the receiving, the taking in, to the holding. And then also to the responding, even right in the midst of receiving, when we lost our awareness and suddenly we regain our mindfulness, right in the midst, we can remember with the power of our mindfulness, oh, what would this experience be like if I were to bring kindness to it now? If I were to bring compassion to it now? If I were to bring appreciation to it now, even right in the midst of reacting or responding, our mindfulness and awareness arises, right in the midst, and whoop, oh, wait a minute, excuse me, let me pause for a moment, please. I'd like to bring something better to this. Would you mind? You know that rant that I was just on? we change course? Shall we try something different here? What do you think? The person who is the object of the rant. No, no, please keep ranting. I really love it. Gives me a chance to practice. I'm working on receiving your rant with so much kindness. If you stop, how will I be able to do that? No, no, please. You can practice with someone else. There are plenty of other people ranting. Just for myself, I'd like to stop right now. Thank you. Maybe you're not suffering, but I'm suffering here. Oh, I was. But I've just started to wake up now. Thank you. And I'm not going to do that anymore. I have better that I can bring to this. I have better that I can share with you. Go practice your compassion with ranting on someone else. So, now that you're all awake again, I think we come near to the end of the time for this session, and introduce the basic paradigm, which now you get to bring into silent motion and interaction with tea time, interaction with your own body and feelings. Interaction with the way you're seeing things, recognizing how you're seeing them. Interaction with the way that you're receiving things and taking them in and recognizing just how, if you were to give a word to how you're doing that, what would that be? And then also, if you feel like, you know, that's good, then good. Or if you feel like you'd like to try seeing what it's like to bring one of these four qualities to that experience, whatever it is, and just you have the time of quiet to be mindful and just see how that goes. Yeah, and please give at least 3 seconds. Yeah, it can be so fast to begin to notice the shift and the change with these things. And with our neurobiology, the way that it works is it's like opening up. You know, if some part that enabled this was like separate, then it's like the light, the electric comes and it starts to come near and then it starts to come together and then it links up and it opens and then it starts to flow through. And if you allow it even a little bit more time and you do that again and again, it will become even stronger, even faster. If you do it many times, it will become so fast. Fast is the speed of habits. Fast is the speed of conditioning. Fast is the speed of awareness, of mindfulness and clear comprehension. It can move so fast like that. And Lulu says, put questions in the
golden plate.
In the golden plate. Oh, that's nice. So yeah, welcome to questions in the golden plate. And now you have this period of time in silence with movement and with, again, with your interactions with your own, you know, body, senses, also whatever you see, feel from others, including the natural world, trees, grass, earth, also open, tea, drinking tea, also open, all of these things. Now your field to experiment, and your experiential practice and awareness, as well as questions. Mindfully writing questions, with loving kindness, please. No, actually anything is okay for the questions.